This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the RPM Subteam for Trademark Claims Data Review Call on Wednesday, the 20th of February, 2019. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge at this time, could you please let yourself be known now? Okay, hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid background noise. With this, I'll turn it over to Julie Hedlund. You can begin, Julie.
Thank you, Julie B. This is Julie Hedlund, and welcome all to today's call. So I'll just quickly run through the agenda, and then once I've done that, I will turn things over to Martin co-chair the call today. So first on the agenda is the review of the agenda and the statements of interest. Then item two is the review of the INTA new GTLD impact study survey results with respect to the claims charter questions one through five, you see there with the links, and any other business. May I ask if anyone has any other business?
Hi, Julie, it's Kathy. I'll have a short any other business at the end.
And I'm sorry, what's the topic?
Our meeting, and just letting people know that I'll do it now, that the schedule has been posted and our meetings will be the Sunday and Monday in Kobe, now that that's official.
Thanks, Kathy, and staff can go ahead and put a link to the meeting schedule in the chat as well. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And so back to the top of the agenda, let me ask if anyone has any statements of interest. Not seeing any hands, I'm not hearing anyone. Then let's go ahead right to agenda item two, and let me just remind all that we will end this call a little bit early in order to, I think it's usually 5 minutes for the top of the hour, in order to allow time for the transition to the following call, which some of you also attend. So let me now turn things over to Martin. Martin, please.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can, Martin.
Perfect. Thank you very much. This is Martin Schill for the record. Welcome everyone to the call. Today we're going to review the IMTA new GTLD impact study survey results with respect to the claims charter questions. I see we had not that many new comments, so I said we can go through this quick enough so we can have some more minutes to work on the next call. Let's start with question one, like we always do. Okay, it's already on screen. Claim charter question one, is the trademark claim search having intended effect? Consider the following questions specifically in the context both of a claim notice as well as a notice of registered name. A, is the trademark claim service having its intended effect of determining bad faith registrations and providing claim notice to the main name applicant? B, is the trademark claim service having any unintended consequences such as deterring good faith the main name applications? And I see that we have a new comment from George. George, would you like to? Oh, yes, he's already on the queue. It's a quick one. Go, George.
Yep, George Kirkus, the transcript. Yeah, I filled out this past week the items I brought up on last week's call, so there's nothing actually new, and I think actually Kathy added a comment regarding a page reference from Griffin, so that there's nothing actually related to the INTA study that's been published on this document. However, I did actually go through the homework this week and found a few items. So I'd like to first make an overarching comment, just like Susan made last week, that this is an unrepresentative and small sample, 33 people. And so the past statistical criticisms of this survey have already been discussed last year. Another point is that there's likely to be a huge overlap in terms of the respondents of this report to the past survey that the analysis group did, which we already covered, and to the analysis group's other documents, which had kind of like comments from different stakeholders. So we shouldn't be looking at these surveys as though they're independent, random samples. It's often the same people that are you know, representing themselves repeatedly with the same comments, just in different documents. So we need to keep that in mind when we look at this. On page 6 of the INTA study, you can actually see that they had 39% of the people, of the companies that responded, had between 5,000 and 24,999 employees, and 39% had 25,000 or more employees. So you can see that that's very unrepresentative of a typical business in general. And also 27% had 1 billion to 5 billion in revenues, and 52% had a whopping 5 billion or more in revenues. So we're really talking about a handful of very large trademark holders. Also on that page, 67% were based in North America, 21% in the EU. So that just provides some background on why this survey should be taken for what it's worth, which is very little. As for question one, there was a comment on page 15 and also repeated on page 51 that 36% of those who were responding feel that trademark claims help. And so that should go into the table somewhere. I'll probably add it after this call. And also there were a handful of comments on page 52 because there was a lot of anecdotal comments that were put in. It said that trademark claims are merely another form of monitoring and are useful in perhaps 20% of cases where an inadvertent application is filed. And then for trademark claims, trademark registration is higher and more difficult than obtaining domain names. The owner of the registered trademark in any jurisdiction might be considered to be authorized by the trademark office to use the mark. Therefore, I feel that trademark claim has mitigated the risk. That's the literal comment. So those were the only ones that I found relevant to question one. Thank you.
Thank you very much, George. Christine, I see you also in the queue. You have the mic.
Thanks. This is Christine, and I have reviewed this data before, but I also, like I mentioned in the chat, I was on vacation. I apologize for not getting my comments in earlier. I wanted to respond briefly to George's suggestion that on slide 6 that the numbers were not representative. I mean, I understand where the point of that, and I agree that it probably doesn't represent necessarily all of the universe of the way trademark, you know, people who have trademarks operate. Oh, and in full disclosure, I think I've said this before in a different context, but Amazon was one of the companies that did not respond to the survey because it had to be completed, and we weren't able to complete it. So that we do not, there is no, we don't have an opinion on this slide. But the reason I'm bringing this up at all is I am wondering, we asked the question, is the Trademark Claim Service having its intended effect of deterring bad faith registrations? Who is the target audience? Whose marks are we trying to protect? So if we're looking at slide 6 and we see a lot of people who participated were in North America, well, if you take all the trademarks around the world, the people who are likely to need this sort of protection, where were they most likely to be located? I don't know the answer to that, but I'm wondering if it's not as skewed as we might think. I mean, if we're really talking about really big companies having proportionately more brands to protect, is the data really as skewed as we might be thinking? I'm not sure we're going to get there, but I'll enter my comments in the chart as well. But I hesitate to just throw out the baby with the bathwater here because I think that in some cases we're reaching our target audience. We are reaching people with big portfolios of brands who spend buko bucks on protection. So I just want to throw that out there as a little bit of a rebuttal point as well, and I'll also put my comment in the doc. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. I see there's some activity in the chat, and as I can see, sort of you're saying or agreeing with what Christine is saying. If anyone wants to come out tonight to continue the discussion, it's your time, or if you want to add something that you have find relevant to this question, you can come up to your mic, Griffin or Michael. If not, we can move to question 2. I'll give a few seconds for you to react. Oh, I also see we have I think that we have a Kathy. Kathy, new comment on question one. Is that correct? Kathy, are you there to clarify?
I'm sorry. What's the question, Martin? Kathy.
I see that there's a new input in green with your name on the PDF.
I think I was asking, I could be wrong. I think I was asking Griffin for a citation on something.
Yeah, you're correct. Comment from Kathy Clement, page number. Thanks. Yes, you're asking Griffin for a quotation. That's right.
And sorry, Griffin. And I just want to apologize. Greg made me do this on the Sunrise where I put some stuff in and I didn't put the exact page number. So I guess to, you know, be completely clean about all of it, we should have the sources and page numbers. So thanks.
Perfect. I don't want to move forward. These people are engaging heavily in a chat debate. If you want to bring it to the mic. Yeah, Christine already said her piece on this. Rebecca, we have Rebecca on the chat. If she's not coming to the mic, I can read her comment. It seems meaty. I have to admit, I'm a bit disturbed by Christine's argument. First, SMEs are presented in other places as the key entities you're trying to benefit. If that's not the case, then the standards for what is effective are different. Two, it sort of sounds like the question being asked then is whether the big brands are successfully offloading some of their enforcement costs to relatively smaller entities like registries, registrars, and protection arts registrants. That may be descriptively true, but it's worth discussing normatively as well. Does anyone want to add on that?
My hand is raised, Martin. It's Kathy.
Oh, yes. Go, Kathy, please.
Okay. So let me see if I can build a bridge between the comments. And if it's wrong, let me know. I think initially, I think we're coming to a clearer understanding of who is actually involved in the survey. Initially, it was presented as kind of members of INTA, and this is what INTA thinks. But my understanding is that members of INTA, and having now gone to an INTA meeting, are very diverse and go from very small to very large. And so I think Christine has helped clarify that this is, you know, as we look at, you know, George has helped clarify and Christine has followed up, that this really is a survey. Those who responded to this and made it all the way through are very large companies with very large budgets and very big brands. But it's only 33, and again, most of those, 52% are companies with a total annual revenue of over $5 billion. So it took us a while to come to that understanding a year or so ago when this was presented, but I think we've got it now. And then I think Rebecca's question makes sense to me. You know, what does that mean and how does that change the impact of what we're looking at? But I think, you know, we have some clarification now on who's in this study, who responded to the survey. So thanks.
Thank you very much, Kathy. And don't worry, Rebecca, as long as you write in the chat, we can keep that on the record. I will keep the mic open for a few more seconds in case someone wants to step up. I mean, this debate obviously affects all questions since we are talking about the INTA survey itself. Michael, you can have the mic.
Yeah, just a quick question, quick comment, and that is that although the INTA survey was answered by larger corporations, largely because they're the only ones that either had the time or the information to complete the survey as it was asked, and the survey, again, was designed for use by the CCTRT and not by this review. At the same time, I think it's should be pointed out that trademark owners, regardless of their size, have the same sort of interests and concerns in regard to domain names. And in fact, smaller trademark owners may have a more larger impact by the domain name system than larger owners. This is something that's hopefully going to be studied in ongoing and new surveys within INTA among trademark owners. But that survey, just by way of background, was sent out to all the regular members of INTA, which include SMEs as well as individuals and larger corporations. But I think the information there is enlightening. It's not dispositive, but none of the information that we have from any of these sources is dispositive. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Michael. I see Rebecca and Kathy have their hand up. Rebecca, you're next.
Rebecca Tushnet. Sorry, if there is background yelling, I apologize. So I think actually you would need a lot more evidence of representativeness to make the claim that the concerns of large trademark owners are the same as the concerns of small and medium trademark owners. In fact, my experience is to the contrary, and it seems like what evidence there is, for example, the evidence about the success rates and rejection rates for small trademark owners in the PTO, for example, is very different from the success and rejection rate and, you know, encountering oppositions and so on for big trademark owners. So I actually see no reason why that empirically shown pattern in registrations would be different in that they have different experiences. Where you go from that is certainly a question on which there can be a debate, but to claim that that this is somehow representative of their concerns or experiences seems to me completely unevidenced and, in fact, counterintuitive based on the things that we know about actual, you know, national registrations and other things in which SMEs diverge from big trademark owners. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. I see Michael has also her hand up. Oh, he's put it down. Michael, go.
Sorry. Yeah, I took down my hand because I don't want to get into a he said, she said, but having practiced in the area for 28 years with large, small, medium companies dealing with trademarks, they do share some of the same concerns. So I don't want to go back and forth with that, but I think we shouldn't be making statements that we can't support empirically when we're looking at whether or not there's information in any of these reports that is useful to provide insight.
Okay. Thank you very much, Michael. Greg, you have your hand up. You're next.
Thanks. Greg Shatton, for the record. Just adding to what Michael said, and, you know, I can speak, you know, only primarily from personal experience and experiences of those around me. And I've represented large, medium, small, tiny trademark owners. And I'd say there is a great deal of overlap in the concerns and issues that the trademark owners have across the board. It's obviously not a complete identity, but the overlap is strong. Regard to the study on PTO success, I haven't read it, so not sure, you know, exactly what it says, but my gut reaction is that a lot of small trademark owners are filing pro se without the help of a trademark lawyer, and that those tend to fail and get opposition, or rather office actions, a lot more often than those that are handled by attorneys. I would be interested to see if they controlled for that, how big the difference would be. To also control for the fact that larger trademark owners are often filing for variations on trademarks that have already been successful. So to the extent that there are differences in experience, I think they are not ones that would necessarily, you know, indicate a difference of interest. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg. I have Kathy, and I do take account on the chat saying that we should stay on task. I think we are discussing on the validity of the data, so we are not that far this time, but it's true that we should try to answer all questions, but we don't have that many input in each one in any case. So, Kathy, you're next?
Yeah, this is Kathy. I think it's a good, an interesting discussion. So I think we know what the survey is, and I think Christine really summarized it well. You know, the nature of the companies that responded are large. But as long as we're talking about personal experience, I'll just throw mine into the mix. I spent 20 years representing small and medium-sized businesses, and mine are on the other side. They're the innovators. They're the entrepreneurs. They're the ones who don't yet have their trademarks. They're the ones who are receiving the trademark claims notices. We've already talked about how much they're chilled by it, that they don't know what to do. So you've got those who have achieved their trademarks, but then you also have those of us who have represented for many years the dozens and dozens, hundreds of new trademark owners, the future trademark owners, the future entrepreneurs. And their experiences are very different, of course. They're the ones who were trying to balance and protect and allow to go through and register their trademarks and create their businesses as they always have. Just to give both sides of the SME issue. Thanks.
Thank you, Gabby. Okay, if no one else wants to jump to the queue, I'm going to move to question two, and in case anyone wants to keep commenting on the validity, you can, of course, continue to do so. It will be a valid point until the end of the call, so you can do it. I have George Kirkos on the queue, and I do believe that George is one of the few, if not only, new comments on this question. So, George, you're next.
Yeah, George Krakos for the transcript. Yeah, the new comment is really just the old comment that I raised last week with regards to the Nelson's Group report, just filling in what I said early. I actually do have a new piece of input, which was from page 53 of the inter-survey. It wasn't really a piece of data. It was more of a proposed change by INTA after reviewing the data. They said that extended slash unlimited period of time for TMCH warnings when domains are registered by third parties, and also increase the time for which TMCH claims notices will be sent to at least a year. Those are both on page 53, and so those relate to this starter question. And also on page 59, there was a comment by somebody that, quote, trademark claims is too short. So that's all I had for question two. Thank you.
Thank you very much, George. I don't know if anyone wants to add, maybe Griffin or Michael said that they did some homework but couldn't put it in. If not, then we can move to question three. Anyone else up to the mic? No. That is already changing to question three. Perfect. And I see George is back up there.
Yep.
Go, George.
Yeah, George Krakos again for the transcript. On question three, I had that same statistic from page 15 and also repeated on page 51, namely that 36% feel that trademark claims helps. And also there were some comments on page 52 that relates to this charter question. Somebody said that trademark claims are merely another form of monitoring and are useful in perhaps 20% of cases where an inadvertent application is filed. And then for trademark claims, trademark registration is higher and more difficult than obtaining domain names. The owner of the registered trademark in any jurisdiction might be considered to be authorized by the trademark office to use the mark. Therefore, I feel that trademark claim has mitigated the risks. And then another one, they have helped mitigate risk in that they permit brand owners the ability to take action in cases of abuse of registrations after the fact, but have failed to deter individuals from registering abusive domains in the first place. So those were the nuggets that I found in the document which relate to question three. Thanks.
Thank you very much, George. This is Martin Goff for the record. I see Kathy had a very small comment also asking for Griffin for a specific quotations on the text, but I see Kathy from the queue, so Kathy, you go.
Yeah, a question for George. The comments that you just read, to what extent are they compilations? Are they survey results, and to what extent are they individual comments? And I'll just add, I think the idea that that only a few, about 36%, felt the trademark claims helped, and then only to a moderate extent. That's somewhere in the middle of the survey. My page numbers didn't come out, sorry. But again, how many, you know, I think what you were reading at the very end were individual comments and not necessarily kind of compiled survey results, but I want to check.
George, you can answer to that.
Yeah, George Kirkus here. Yeah, thanks for the question, Kathy. The numerical results, which were on page 15 and page 51, page 15 really just summarizes page 51, the 36% number, that is a survey result. On page 52, it's just, I guess they had free-form responses, and so it had those free-form responses from a handful of people. With regards to the 36%, for those of us that are on both the Sunrise and the Claims Working Group, we'll note that 64% felt that Sunrise periods were more helpful in terms of at least this survey, and we might want to contrast that with the results that we had in the other survey. Thank you.
Thank you very much, George. I saw before Michael's hand went up, but it went down. Does anyone else have any other comments regarding this further question? If none, and I don't see anything on the chat as well, yes, we can move to question four. Thank you, staff. In question four, I only see George's new input. George, you're also up. Thank you.
Yeah, George Kirkus again for the transcript. That new input is just last week's input for the that we had with relation to the analysis group report. For this week's homework, I did find a comment on page 53. This is one of these anecdotal comments, which is relevant to this charter question, namely increase the time for which TMCH claims notices will be sent to at least a year and enlarge to include domains with only slight spelling variations. So it was the second part of that comment with regards to slight spelling variations, which relates to charter question four, which is about the exact match requirements. Thank you.
Thank you, George. And I do see that some of your comments are not on the PDF, so do remember to put them afterwards in the call when they're open again, like you did last week. I see you have your hand up again. Is the old one?
Yeah, George Kirk was here for the transcript. Yeah, that was my plan. As I mentioned last week, I thought I'd give other people the opportunity to shine if they had input. So that's why I didn't put in my input before the meeting, but I'll do that after the call.
Thank you very much, George. Anyone have any other comment on this question? We can move to question five and our last question. I do have one AOB I forgot also. We do have one more thing before we end. George says nothing on Q5 from me. That's true, because your comment is regarding, like the previous one, it's just an update on the previous data we analyzed. So if no one has a comment specifically to question 5, we can have 5 seconds to answer, come to the mic. If not, we're going to move on. In the case we have to move on, I will ask staff, maybe Julie or Ariel, to walk us through the next set of data that we are going to work on, that I know is going to come up after this call. And George,
oh, thank
of
you.
Course, you can comment on workload if you want to. Go, Julie.
Thank you very much. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. So, refer to my colleague Ariel as well, but so for homework for next week's call, there are a few remaining previously collected data sources that we can put out for homework to compare against the charter questions. And also, there are several additional data sources that people have submitted. Staff have gathered those into a spreadsheet, and those also will be put out as to be considered as homework for next week. But I see that Kathy has her hand up, so I'm going to go ahead and defer to Kathy. Thank you.
Actually, it's a question for you, Julie. And it has to do with workload. So how many additional data sources are there from our original additional data, you know, the table we've been working off of with the analysis group materials and the old analysis group report and the inter-survey? And then how much additional data is there? And my sense is that's a lot, and that may be way too much to cover in the next meeting. So I wanted to ask you how much is on that new additional data table and how we can spread that out a little more evenly. Thanks.
Thanks, actually. And I'm going to ask my colleague Ariel to help speak to that as well. And just also before I do that, just to note that of the previously collected data, these are data sources that that the working group had seen previously. That's why they're previously collected data. So we're hoping that this is more of a refresher. There aren't many left in that respect. But let me go and turn things to Ariel. Ariel, please.
Thanks, Julie. This is Ariel from staff. So to answer Kathy's question, the last three that we're dealing with on the previously collected data spreadsheet is the staff compiled summary data on sandwich registrations. That's the first one. And then the second one is really ICANN.org web page about the registry operator and the relevant dates for sunrise trademark claims and other specific approved program periods. It's not really a document a slide. It's really just a web page on ICANN.org. And then the last one is the transcript from data sub team's meeting with John Nevitt from Donuts at ICANN 61, and that has some additional information. So that's really the last three on this previously collected spreadsheet. It's in staff's view, it's not really a lot to review, so we think it's a manageable workload.
Thank you, Ariel. And let me ask Ariel, how many additional data sources did people submit? And I should know this, and I apologize.
There's a total of 15 additional data sources, and also staff plan to organize the spreadsheet in a way to help the review process be more efficient. So, for example, we can sort them based on the charter questions they're responding to, but they're mostly blog posts and articles. So they're a total of 15 entries.
Well, thank you very much, Ariel. That's really helpful. Martin, if I may, I could go ahead and call on the two members who have their hands up, George and Kathy.
George Krikos for the transcript. Yeah, I did post a link to the approximately 50 additional sources of data that I didn't have an opportunity to put into the Google Docs. This is the 3.7 appeal that I had as part of this. Suppression of these data sources, and I think some of them will be relevant to trademark claims. More of them are related to Sunrise. And I do think that they should be considered in our working group work now. The alternative is that they get suppressed, and I have to resubmit them in once we have public comments, and then we do the work then. But I think, you know, these are data sources that we know about. You know, we should consider them now. I think having to do that form with the extreme workload issues on top of the additional homework that only me and a handful of other people have actually been doing, you know, you have to consider, take that into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. And I have Kathy, and then I'm going to put myself in the queue. Kathy, please.
Okay. So this is Kathy. A question back to Ariel or to you, Julie. Are we talking about 18 documents for homework next week? I know we're heading into the COBE meeting. I'm very, very aware of that. But are we talking about 18 documents for next week?
Thank you, Kathy. I don't know that I would call them necessarily 18 documents per se. I don't. There's three that are, and I think George even has noted in the chat, that are fairly limited as far as what they contain. So the three of the previous Eclipse, and then the additional data consists mostly of, I think, as Ariel noted, some blog posts, various links. So let me just also point out that the additional data that we've received, you know, is the data that was sent in the form that was requested. So those are the data that we do plan to look at, you know, as a part of the homework for next week. And so thanks to those who did submit the data in the according to the procedures and the form that was requested. And as we did indicate in the procedures, you know, based on the guidance from the working group co-chairs, that if the form, if the data wasn't provided in the form as requested, then it's not been included. But I see my colleague Ariel has her hand up. Ariel, please.
Thanks, Julie. And I just want to add one more thing about the review of the additional data. When we set up the Google form, we did ask the submitters to answer how the data responds to the charter question and which charter question this data is applicable to. So basically, I think when the sub-team is reviewing these additional submissions, the task is perhaps look at their comments, especially which charter question these data apply to and how they apply, and then see whether you agree, disagree, or whether you have additional comments to that. So I think the review process will be slightly different from how we did in the Google Docs for the previously collected data, because the sub-team members were expected to actually answer which charter question, how the data assists the charter question. So that task is kind of removed. My understanding of that.
Thank you very much, Ariel. That's quite helpful. And Martin, back over to you.
I don't have much to add. That was my only request for staff to talk about the next week and the workload. If someone has any other comment on it. I know there's some activity on the chat, if either George, Kathy, or if you are the main partners right now. If not, we can wrap up 10 minutes before casual and have 10 minutes to prepare for the next call. You have 10 seconds to speak now. I see George, you have the last word maybe.
George Griffiths here. I'd like to know if anybody actually opposes the inclusion of those 50 sources other than again staff, because you know, these are valuable sources when we're kind of hungry for data. We have all these articles that could be relevant to answering the charter questions. I don't see a good reason why people want to exclude them just because me and a few other people in good faith had extreme overload due to actually doing all the homework that nobody else even appeared to attempt. So we shouldn't be penalized by having these data sources suppressed. So if anybody is actually actively opposed to considering these sources, I'd like to know who. Thanks.
I think Julie has her hand up. Julie, go ahead.
I think it just as a procedural point, the procedures have been, you know, developed. The procedures for submitting additional data were developed by the working group co-chairs. As a procedural point, it was quite clear how the data should be submitted, and people did submit the data according to those procedures. So I think that if there's any change in that procedure, it's not, it would be something for the working group co-chairs to decide, not necessarily for the working group members to decide. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Julie. And yes, as a co-chair, I have to say the same thing. We did set out a process, and they appeal your the procedure we that you say that you challenge, just that the appeal process doesn't challenge the decision per se, and definitely doesn't suspend anything we're doing. So unless the co-chairs all together with all the co-chairs decide that you are reopening something, yes, we cannot accept new submissions for anyone. I hope that clears it up. And we can continue this debate on the list.
Martin, I'm not seeing any other hands up. This is Julie Hudson,
no,
staff.
No. We can conclude the call if you want, so we can have the 5 minutes extra for the next call.
Go ahead. Noting something from the chat too, just to note that you know, working group members will have the opportunity to comment when we discuss these additional sources. And if there's something that you can point to that helps to answer a question, that could form part of the discussion. And thank you that very much. Thank you very much, Martin, for chairing today. And thank you, everyone, for joining. We'll go ahead and adjourn this call. And noting that that we do start the following call, the sunrise call, for those who attend at 5 minutes past the hour, so you'll have a little extra time. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. This meeting's adjourned. You can disconnect your line and have a good rest of your day.